Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Small Council Radio. So on today's episode, kind of last-minute reschedule, had a lot of stuff going on yesterday, but have here with me Brett. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, of course. It's always a pleasure. We missed this weekend, and, you know, as I said, I want to be, a bit more active with the community and talking and getting some of my ideas out there and just kind of chatting with everybody. So,
yeah, and today's episode, again, if you haven't seen the title, we're going to be talking about attachments. It's more a general discussion about attachments, when to put them in units, when not to, but we might dive into some specific examples and whatnot and some awesome combinations. But this is actually, because we have like a huge list of like topics to talk about, and this one's been on there for a while. A lot of the topics were kind of delayed with trying to go over all the different 2021 units and all the, every aspect of all the factions with 2021. But even before we had that on our plate, this topic has kind of sat in our queue, so to speak, for quite a while. So I'm excited to get to talk about this one. So I wanted to talk about this topic because I felt that it would help a lot of newer players out. And that's one thing I want to start doing is mixing in some topics that are really good for newer players, or even maybe not even necessarily newer players, but just casual ones that are looking to, maybe just do their monthly tournament, not looking to go to some big event, but kind of wants to dip their toe in, a little more of the competitive aspect without, diving too much into it. But, sometimes people can, I think, be stuck in their ways of list building, whether it be never running attachments or running too many attachments, running attachments in the wrong units that don't synergize as well, as because I've seen lots of lists where the list looks amazing, and they're asking for criticism, and I'm just like, oh well, this looks perfect, just this one attachment, I think it would actually be better, you don't have to switch the attachment, just move it to this other unit because I think you would benefit more from it. And that's kind of what today's topic's about. So to kind of start us off, Brett, what's your thoughts and opinion about this topic?
This one's a little bit odd for me because as a fan of, the way the game is designed, as a flavor piece, I absolutely love attachments. I love the customization options. I love some of the really cool things that you can do. The hiccup for me is since I mostly play competitive, now granted I do play very casually in person, particularly in Indy where we're really building up the club. We've got several new players. We're working on, building Indy back to about 20 regular players, which is awesome. But I am not going to go to Indy and, slap them in the mouth with this optimized Lannister panic list. I've got my Champions of Faith in all the right places. I've got Flaymen that are boosted by High Sparrow. I'm going to frustrate the crap out of you with this list. I try to reserve that for the more competitive things. But when I play the more casual, I actually have a ton more fun because some of these attachments that I bring, it's like, man, this is really, really cool. Like this is working. But again, it's in that more of a casual atmosphere because I'm not having to play against Othel. I'm not having to play against, an optimized Lannister Faith Militant with Flaymen. A lot of times people are bringing maybe one Flaymen just to add a little bit of mobility, but it's not it's not to the level that you see when you get into a more competitive kind of cutthroat environment. So the reason this subject is tricky for me is because I love attachments, but then at the same time, the competitive side of me, the side of me that knows, you know, what it takes to win games at the tournament level is like, you know, you min-max the attachments. You find there, if there's an attachment that you can't do without, you know, you bring it. If not, you're either reaching for an upgraded NCU, finding a way to squeeze in, you know, if you've got a 6-point unit and you've got the point to add an attachment, you're pretty much always going to upgrade it to like Hedge Knights, or you're going to drop it down to a 5-pointer and bring your 4-pointer up or something like this. You know, you're going to move the parts around, and it's generally going to be not using those points to add attachments. You're going to upgrade your 4-point NCU to a 5-point NCU to make the list stronger in that sense, or you're going to upgrade that unit. You know, Stormcrow archers become Bastards Girls, something like this is generally what happens.
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of exploring the different attachment options is an awesome way to expand your, you know, just your experience as a player. I can't tell you how many times that I've seen some attachments that just look horrible on paper. And I'm not saying every time that happens, you know, I play them and they become this amazing attachment, but they, you know, more often than not, they're at minimum just very enjoyable to play. Like, you know, it spices, you know, the game up, it mixes it up, it opens new avenues and new combo potentials that may not be the most optimal thing out there, but it gives you this different, you know, level of play that, you know, kind of breathes, you know, some fresh life into the game. So that's, you know, and that's why I'm always, that's the one thing I'm the most excited about all the time seeing is hero boxes. Just the, all the different commanders, attachments, NCUs that they start adding to factions. And, you know, I cannot wait for whatever they have in store for neutral hero box 3. Because, you know, obviously that can go into seven, I think, if you're not counting Free Folk, 7 different factions. You know, assuming we're talking neutrals as their own faction. I know some people out there don't recognize
them.
Yeah,
sorry. Lannister Stark, neutral, Night's Watch, Targaryen, Baratheon, Greyjoy. So, yeah.
Greyjoy, yep, so 7. So, yeah, when that Hero Box 3 comes out for neutral, I mean, that's 7 factions. I mean, because I play all of them. I know not everyone out there does that, but even if you just play multiple factions, when you get a neutral hero box, I mean, it doubles, triples, quadruples, etc., the number of potential in your list building. So I would definitely, you know, before we dive way too deep into this topic, you know, anyone that's out there that's always been kind of on the fence about certain attachments, even if they look horrible on paper, I'm talking straight up not even worth their points, I would say if you're playing a casual game, just throw them in there. I mean, I bet you more often than not they're at least going to perform. You know, if your expectations are they're going to be really bad, chances are they'll at least exceed your expectations. You know, they might not blow your mind, and you may not play them again after that game, but, you know, it just, again, it's another way to open up avenues of different play styles and different, potential for your faction. So Brett, we'll start with this. What's one unit that you see get added attachments to that you think, I don't know how the right way to word this, because I'm not trying to imply that it's wrong for anyone to add an attachment to any in particular unit, but I guess what unit would you say is really good by itself and doesn't really need that extra investment in points. But, I mean, obviously you still could. But so more so, what would be a good unit, or what would be a unit that you see a lot of people just, they dump points into with attachments that you don't really think is necessary and the points could be better spent elsewhere?
It's a difficult question. Obviously, you're throwing out anything that has adaptive because they're going to get an attachment. I mean, a thing that I'm seeing.
That was what I was going to suggest.
The Stormcrow mercenaries in a neutral army, I'm seeing them get played with Ramsey and Reek because you can use the Stormcrow adaptive ability to get Reek for free, essentially, and then the Stormcrow mercs. As far as a five-point unit, they're a little bit tankier than the Cutthroats, which is what you want for your commander. So if you're squeezing that five-point unit in, Ramsey feels like a pretty good spot for that because you'll get Reek, and then you don't feel like you're wasting points to get that extra point of armor save that the Stormcrow mercs offer versus the Cutthroats. But other than that, a unit that I see almost always getting an attachment as poor fellows, they're generally getting the Champion of the Faith. That's dual purpose. It's because you generate faith tokens that way, and also it's just a phenomenal five-point support piece. It's a unit that's misleadingly tanky, couple of wounds because of precision, and then the Champion of the Faith just becomes a token farm for your other heavy hitters. Reavers, I see attachments in them. But I think as far as Greyjoys go, the attachments that I see more than anything are Victarion because he has Relentless, Victarion's attachment. You see Newt, you see Carl, and you see Asha. Those are, like, really, really popular attachments. Greyjoys seem to be an army that kind of likes attachments because those guys are so popular. Newt is nearly auto-include if you're running Victarion. And almost every list is going to have Carl because Expert Duelist is so good. But also Asha just takes whatever unit and giving them that five morale is really, really, really strong. So I see a lot of Iron Makers with Asha and Carl. That's a nine-point unit. I guess the direct answer to your question is I'm not sure how much I love that build. That's 9 points. I get Expert Duelist is really, really, really good. But for those 9 points, you could be doing Flayed Men with the Glory Seeker, you know, and getting some healing out of the Flayed Men, plus adding the mobility. Or you could even just be doing something as simple as Reavers with Victarion's attachment and getting two activations out of it, and it's a point less. I get why it's popular. I get why it's strong. I don't want to talk out of turn because I am by no means a Greyjoy player. They are one of the armies I have never touched. I think they are actually the only army I've never played. I've played all neutrals. I've played everything else. I have never picked up Greyjoys and played a game. So I am probably talking out of turn here. You might be able to enlighten me, but from where I'm sitting, that 9-point unit seems like a pretty big investment when you're looking at a faction that has 4-point bowmen and a very, very, very good, arguably the best 5-point unit in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, you're not wrong. I would agree with that. Anytime I'm building a list and I have Iron Makers in there, you know, whether it be Asha Commander or it's Asha 1-point attachment, and then I have Carl 1-point attachment and or the 2-point attachment. You know, I always try to spread around those effects because having this 9-point tanky unit that has moderate offense and isn't, you know, is just average speed for infantry. It's not something as a Greyjoy player I want to invest that many points into, knowing that the Greyjoys really are kind of the second Horde faction as of right now. You know, obviously we could get like two more units after the Silenced Men, that are also like 7 points and really drive home that this faction isn't supposed to be like a horde. But as of right now, because of Bowmen, Trappers, and Reavers all being, in my opinion, the best three units in the faction, and they're all 5 and 4 points. Now, what I actually like to try to do is, because I know if you were to say, like, the number one or number two unit, like, attachment combo in the game for Greyjoys, it's probably Asha Commander in Iron Makers with the one-point Carl attachment. And, yes, that one's only 8 points, but, again, I would even say even at 8 points, being your commander, I would rather just put Asha in Trappers or Bowman, but probably Trappers because you might want to still get her on an objective, and Bowman you kind of want to keep more in the backfield. And now you have this 4 point Trapper unit that has a 5-up morale, giving a 5-up morale bubble, and is only a 4-point investment that you can sit Asha over on an objective, granting this bubble over to, I have a list where it's Asha and the Trappers, and then two Iron Makers, one with Carl, 2-point attachment. And I know, again, that is, you know, that's going to be 9 points, but now I can have that Iron Maker unit get Eric's pillage to get that 2-up, 5-up. And then I have another Iron Maker with Euron, and I have him stay within Asha's bubble. So now I have on the field that can stay far from each other, a 2-up, 5-up, and really start to use that defensive unit to harass and be this, like, unmovable thing that's just, you know, going on the opponent's side of the board rather than kind of sitting back and waiting for them to come to me. But I like to try to, even though Greyjoys have a decent amount of ways between Carl and the captains to, you know, have that doubled up attachment slots, I try to spread around the wealth, you know, spread around the attachments to all my different units to just kind of start giving the buffs everywhere. But to kind of go back to the Lannister topic, you were talking about the poor fellows. I would say one unit for me that I see so many people just running, you know, with no attachment in it, and I understand why they're so strong, is guardsmen. You know, I absolutely love putting attachments to guardsmen, offensive attachments, to give them that extra little bite. So that way, you know, my opponent can't just ignore me. I may not be some, like, super offensive unit with any attachment in there, but I have enough offense that I'm going to whittle them down over the course of the game. And if they ever decide to try to, you know, retaliate from my attacks, you know, they could end up finishing themselves off. So, like, my number one attachment I love putting in them is just an assault veteran. You know, because now my 6 dice on a 4-up have that -1/+1 damage, and then if you put the Lannister pays his debts on there and get that triggered, now you're going with a -3 on that panic, and then a +1 on the damage, +2 if you got Joffrey, +3 if you want to do a Hear Me Roar. I mean, you could really turn some guardsmen into some, you know, super, like, damage potential, depending on what resources you have on hand.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a concept I've talked about, but I haven't really done a whole lot to make it reality. I was tinkering around with Stormcrow Mercenaries with Mandan Moore kind of for the same reason. At 5 points, he gives them 3+ to hit and sundering. I do like the idea of guardsmen with Mandan Moore. but definitely the assault veteran. I think everybody who's played more than, you know, a handful of games versus mixed factions has seen Flayed Men, has seen Roos's commander, things like this. They understand how powerful Intimidating Presence is. It's one of the better keywords in the game. Definitely, I don't think it's the best, but it's a very good one. So the assault veteran having it just on hand is pretty scary. I do still like Manon more. He was a guy I wanted to love. In 1.6, his 2-point price tag and situational, you know, units kind of kept him out of play. Now I think he's phenomenal. I think he works in Blackguard. He works in Mercenaries. He works in Guardsmen. And you could even make a case for putting him in Poor Fellows. I know you only get 5 attack dice, but you would have 4+ to hit, Thundering, and then the Precision as well. Could be a pretty nasty bite from the Guardsmen. But it's a concept I wanted to try, you know, with Starks and the Sworn Sword Captain even. You know, a unit of Blackguard with the Sworn Sword Captain could work, because you want to give incentive to attack these tanky units, and the only way to do that is to make those tanky units have a little bit of bite, which is, you know, a benefit to Iron Makers. They're one of the few truly tanky, like 3+ armor save or better units that will actually come in and do a lot of damage if you ignore them, because of their critical blow hitting on 3+, and then you're getting weakened if you roll a 1 on the defensive dice. They can be pretty problematic. They're disruptive. So I like pushing that concept and that idea out to other units.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen, you know, some people, you know, some random lists around you know, the internet that, you know, you give in a Euron list, you know, you have that intimidating presence. And if you can get those Iron Makers with, what's his face, Vargo, you put Vargo in there, give them that vicious. And because you have multiple ways to give out weakened, for some attachment sniping, and then you can put like 1-point Carl someplace else. It really, you know, combined with that critical blow on, like if you let that Iron Maker unit get that charge off, and if they can even get even just a couple sixes in there, and then now with that vicious, and then if the intimidating presence is active, I mean, you're looking at probably a lot of pain. I would say, while we're on the topic of Greyjoys, one unit I do want to say that personally feel is one of those units that almost absolutely needs an attachment, and that's just because of my opinion that I think they're just lacking something, and that's the Reapers. They're my favorite model. Well, I don't know, once the Silence Men officially drop by me, Silence Men will probably be my new favorite, but as of right now, the Reapers are my favorite unit. Just the way they look, the way they're, you know, the way they're designed and how they're supposed to operate. But that's kind of the, you know, also their drawback is the fact that their ability is only when they attack. Whereas things like Prey on Fear and Intimidating Presence, you just simply have to be engaged, and every time they pass or fail a panic test, it will trigger those effects, whereas the only time you're going to get the effects from the Reapers is when they attack and you then fail. So the the Reapers are a unit that I just can't bring myself to field unless I'm putting an attachment in there. A lot of times I like putting Carl in there for that auto wound to trigger that panic test automatically. Sometimes a Warsworn, just because, you know, extra healing. If I can get 2 pillage on that unit, now I'm healing an insane amount every time, not only when I deal at least 1 wound, but if they then fail, it almost... the healing itself ends up being so much that they're really hard to move. Another attachment I like putting in there is is just commanders, like Victarion, Balon, a lot of that stuff. I mean, Balon is kind of the same reason as the Warsworn. I mean, they both have Fuel by Slaughter. Victarion, just because, you know, I can get him with his cards into combat really good. But, yeah, they're definitely that one unit that comes to mind that I just can't bring myself to field them without an attachment. I've had talks with a couple people about it, but to me, I don't know, it just seems odd, excuse me, that the Silencemen, Iron Makers, and Reapers all have 7-5-4 as their profile, and they're all like the more elite-ish units. But then you have the Reavers who are 5 points, and they're 7-6-4. I mean, I could understand Iron Makers because they're so defensive, staying at 7-5-4, but I almost feel like the Reavers should be 7-5-4, and then the Reapers and the Silencemen should be 7-6-4. And I think that small little change could really change my mind about Reapers and Silencemen, because I know everyone heard when we reviewed the Silencemen, you know, we had talked about that, and I was shocked that they were 7 points. I was so sure they were going to be six, but I think that small little. How about you? Is there a unit that comes to mind that you just, you know, you look at it and you could put an attachment in there, but you just, your habits always has you running them with no attachment? Is there a unit in there that you like have to run an attachment in? Like I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but when you build your list, you're just like, that unit, I really want to have something in there to give it that extra boost.
Well, it's tricky for me. I'm primarily playing in person. I'm playing Baratheon. And then, like, online on TTS and in current tournaments and most of my pickup games, I'm messing around with Lannisters more than anything. Obviously, Night's Watch is still in my back pocket there, faction, since, like, 2019. So I just don't really play Night's Watch right now because no matter what I run, even if I leave the crossbows at home, there's always grumbling and complaining when you bring Night's Watch. So that's an unfortunate thing because I really like them, but I feel like not only from the jury of popular opinion or whatever you want to say, it's always an asterisk if you win with Night's Watch. It doesn't matter if you play, you know, no conscripts and you're running like starter box Night's Watch. There will always be grumbling and complaining, and people will say things like, oh, well, of course you won, you played Night's Watch. I very strongly dislike that. So with Lannisters, for me, I'm just now kind of tinkering with Red Cloaks. I'm just now buying into the Red Cloak thing, which is so probably unheard of for most people because Red Cloaks are so, so good. But I wanted to avoid them kind of because of the same thing, in particular when the charge action was still two actions and people were grumbling and complaining about them so much, I purposely avoided running Red Cloaks as a result. But now I'm getting into them, and I think the temptation is there to throw it, you know, even an assault vet in there. I'm running them with Roost Commander right now, and that intimidating presence is really, really nasty. The assault vet and even the Bolt and Flare are really tempting. Man and Moore, obviously, always a solid choice, but even something like Aerys Oakheart to shore up their defense and keep them around at three ranks for longer, or Barristan Selmy. And I know Selmy's 2 points that turns them into what's essentially a unit of Flayed Men, but if you can keep your Red Cloaks at three ranks by either rerolling defensive dice with Oakheart or healing with Selmy, and with Selmy you're shoring up their morale from a 6 to a 4, I think it can be pretty strong. But at the same time, they function almost just like a unit of archers. You can sit them on the back, throw some panic tests
as support, which is like a ranged attack. If you're running the High Sparrow, you can get some healing out by targeting a weaker morale unit, throwing the High Sparrow on them specifically to target them with your Red Cloaks, and they just work really well in that regard. But they do get quite a bit nastier when you start adding attachments to them. I know Yannick, our friend from Tabletop Warden, is currently running a list doing really, really well in this German event that he and I are playing. It's the Tabletop Warden tournament. He's running Red Cloaks with Man and Morn. I think he has Red Cloaks with another attachment, and he is in the top four right now. I think he's currently in second place. So he's doing really, really well with that. So I guess that's one unit that comes to mind. They're perfectly fine on their own. They're perfectly fine and capable on their own, but throwing that attachment in them really does ramp them up, and it gives them a couple of other purposes. The other one that comes to mind, I guess, is any ranged unit. Now, of course, you're discounting Night's Watch crossbowmen with Watch Captain, because that's everybody knows that one. But any ranged unit where you're adding brawn is really, 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 really good. So there's always that temptation to do that as well. And the Kranigman
especially
Warden, for Stark Bowman with the Kranigman Warden are one of the better 7-point range units. They just do so much. Such a cool unit.
Yeah, and I was going to say the Lightbringers with Brawn, I think, are like the go-to ranged combo with Brawn, just because of the Lightbringers' natural 4-up save and 6-up morale. I mean, making them a 3-up, 5-up is just, like, it's almost like unheard of for a ranged unit to have. Go back to what you're talking about with the Red Cloaks. It's funny that you mentioned that. I actually just played a game Saturday with Spencer, and I ran 2 Red Cloaks, Mandamore, and then the other one I actually ran with Marin Trant, because the timing of Intimidation of the Crown and the timing of Lannister Justice are the same. So I can, when attacking, give the panicked and weakened token out so that that way when they then take their panic test, they are now panicked, have a panic token for me to apply immediately if I need to. And then I was running Tywin Commander, so that weaken token also compound the whole weaken token theme of the army. Red Cloaks are that's a whole another show, whole another thing. But let's just say me and Spencer played back to back. I played Lannisters with Red Cloaks and demolished him with them, and then he played them against me and then demolished me. It was something else. What it came down to was just the synergy of the Red Cloaks Lannister Justice and just the Lannister, what the Lannisters already want to do with being able to do negatives and increase the damage modifier, and then just all these different things for panic, that I think that's what ends up turning into something just crazy in the end for the combo potential of the Red Cloaks with Lannisters and Joffrey NCU to make sure you're guaranteed that zone. I definitely agree with these guys. Are definitely fine on their own, except especially 6 points. When you're paying 6 points or less for something, I don't think anything that costs 5 can hit better than a 4-up, unless you're talking about like outside abilities later on. But naturally, you don't start at anything that's better than a 4-up. But 6-up. A lot of 6-up units are still hitting on 4s, but when you find a handful of them that do hit on 3s, it's pretty crazy, their potential. So I would say more often than not, when I'm running these guys, I'm also adding an attachment of some kind, whether it be the assault vet or some sort of King's Guard, since I'm already going to want to run Joffrey. All right, let's see. What would you say is some like go-to combo potentials, like attachment combos that maybe a lot of competitive players would know about, but maybe more casual players might not have put the two together?
I think from the free folk end, just touch on them briefly. The combination of Harma's attachment is in conjunction with her unlocking her bannerman is really, really, really nasty. Now, I know that you know about, and you do run, Harma's bannerman in a unit of Spearwives with Spearwife Matriarch, turning them into a very deadly, but also very, very, very annoying unit. But Harma herself, bringing Sentinel, is just so good. Let me think. Who else has Sentinel? Sentinels themselves have Sentinel, of course.
The noble attachment.
Frankly, that's what I was getting at. Is frankly, and the noble Solo himself. Frankly, I'm surprised. You see a lot of Solo Dragonstone Noble. That's probably because he's a four-point unit, you know, in an activation that's not an NCU for a faction that really doesn't have a lot of ways to get to high activations. Probably a big reason why the Noble's so popular. But the Noble attachment is maybe criminally underused, I would say. Putting that guy in a unit of Flayed Men is...
Yep.
Really, really, really scary. If you've got a unit like the Lightbringers, I know that the Lightbringers are 7 points. I know they're a little bit expensive, but if you've got them kind of standing there firing shots into you and chaining panic, that's a unit that you're going to want to get over and get rid of. And if you've got Flayed Men with the Dragonstone Nobles sitting in range of that unit to countercharge, it can be... That can be the key to, you know, keeping those archers firing, because they can't risk getting that flank charge by the Flayed Men because they charge the archers to get rid of them. They can't reliably be crown zapped and their damage brought down because their morale is pretty good. So I would definitely, if you're just kind of getting into the game, you haven't had a lot of experience, I think any attachment that brings War Cry is definitely something that you need to be looking into getting into your list. That's Torment for Free Folk, the Champion of Faith for Lannisters, Blood Riders come with it, Targaryens, I think that's their only access to it. Asha's attachment, another reason she's so popular, it's not just the morale buff, it's War Cry. And She Bears for Starks bringing War Cry. That's an ability you really need to look at. The other one is Sentinel. I think it's an ability that you want to kind of chase after. This revamped version of the game, they've kind of toned down some of the movement shenanigans. Swift Advance has become Swift Reposition, which at best is a 3-inch maneuver. So any ability that's giving you a free maneuver on your opponent's turn is going to be really, really strong. Anybody who's played Rob's Commander or Tyrion's Commander and taken advantage of even the 3-inch shift that happens on your opponent's turn can probably testify to how good that is. So Sentinel is just that much better. I mean, the counter charge is cherry, you know, on top of the ice cream sundae. But even just the maneuver is really, really, really good.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Especially if you can have multiple of them. I love running, I have one list. It's, a unit of Sentinels with the Sentinel Order, but then I also have a unit of Zorse Riders with a Dragonstone Noble, because now I have a Cavalry unit that moves, I believe, 6 inches, right? They didn't change that or anything. Let me just double-check, make sure I'm not misspeaking. So they're, I believe, the only unit that Baratheons have access to that and only cavalry between the Baratheon and the neutrals that they have access to that has a 6-inch move. So, and the Zorse Riders now with what they were changed from what we saw now need to get into the flank or rear to get one or both of their effects. And that Sentinel order can really help you get, you know, that free 6-inch maneuver is really going to help you get into that flank of a unit. And then not only that, like I was saying, having multiple Sentinel orders, you know, between the Sentinels and then now this this cavalry unit, whether or not you don't want Zorse Riders, if you just want to run, you know, Flayed Men, that, you know, you're getting all this free free movement, like you said, on your opponent's turn, but it's even better than that because it's in reaction to the completion of an attack, meaning it, even though it's on your opponent's turn, it's after they've pretty much done anything that would matter. So it's not like you're moving within position of being attacked now before you have the chance to do something about it. And then to go back to what you're talking about with Free Folk, Harma, you know, she gives Sentinel, but I actually also love, let's see, let me pull up my list with her. I absolutely love also putting her in a unit of Cave Dwellers Savages. You know, that four, you know, 6-up save is a little dangerous for your commander, but a 4-up morale means, you know, they're going to have to kill you through weight of dice usually. And then now their movement is a 7 with Sentinel. Or no, wait, I'm thinking that, no, she has the superior flanking, but still, Harma commander with the +1 move, and then you put Egret on them to give them an 8-inch maneuver, you know, a 16-inch march, especially if you also take the free maneuver with Egret influence first, and now you're giving your Cave Dweller Savages an 8-inch free maneuver to really move up the field if necessary, especially if you also have Lady Val. You could do it twice. Now you've gone 16 inches and haven't even activated. And then as you're saying, that is my number one favorite combo, is Harma's Bannerman and a Matriarch in a Spearwife. I know that's 7 points for a Free Folk unit, but if your opponent doesn't have a ranged unit, or just let's say because you're Free Folk and you have a lot of activation drops, you can avoid your this unit being within range of your opponent's ranged unit. Only like true weakness, in my opinion, is a ranged unit just picking them off. But more often than not, whatever charges into them, you know, they're going to do like, I don't know, 4 to 7 wounds usually, and you're going to retreat and heal 2 to 4 of that, and then now be in perfect position to get your combo off, or even get your combo off first. They attack you, gives you that free retreat and heal, and you know, it just allows you to do what the Spearwives were meant to do, but you can do it over and over and over again. Whereas, you know, a lot of times this unit, you just put, let's say, I know a lot of people like putting the Champion of Bone or just some other attachment in there besides the Matriarch or the Bannerman. The, let's see which ones. Yeah, the, I think is like the main one people like to put in there. But still, it's an awesome combo to do, but once you've shot and you're stuck in there, you now need to find other resources to get yourself at free retreat, because you don't want to be spending their action to retreat. I know you could always take Lady Val or take the maneuver zone, but in my opinion, Lady Val is the weakest NCU. I'm not saying she's a horrible NCU by no means. I'm just saying of your options, in my opinion, she's the weakest. Not only that, you're going to have to replace a zone's effect to get that retreat, or, like I said, take that maneuver zone to get that retreat. Just simply taking the matriarch allows you to, get that retreat by, really doing almost nothing, and you can get it once a round because it's an order. And it, it's a reaction, not an action. Whereas Lady Val and or just using another NC to take the maneuver zone is something you're going to have to do on your action. And there's going to be a step in between doing that and then being able to shoot and charge again with your spearwives. Whereas taking that matriarch allows you to get attacked, retreat, and now you're in prime position to get your double look off, your shot and then your charge. And I think that's where, spearwives are, I think, like the MVP for most free folk lists. And, the more times you can get that combination off with the, charging volley, the more potent your spearwives are going to be, especially for, a 6-point investment, 7 if you're running the Bannerman. I have a bunch of lists where I have 2 spearwives, both with matriarchs, and then 1 with the Bannerman. And then I just fill it in with some chaff, with raiders and whatnot. And they put in so much work. What would you, are there any attachments that come to mind that are kind of underutilized just because of other attachments that are available, just kind of outshine them? And, not outshine them because, not because the attachments are bad, just the other options are just so good.
The for Baratheon, the pikeman captain. I think that's what he is. Let me have a look. I think he's the pike captain. Yes, the pikeman captain. I mean, he had boldness and courage. That's a very, very, very strong ability. In particular, it's good in Bastards Girls, but it's kind of another thing. That's an 8-point slot. But I think for Baratheons, the opportunity cost for running that unit is like a unit of flayed men, or if you're running Champions of the Stag, of course, that's 8 points as well. But giving the Bastards Girls 5-7 is pretty good. And I know that it's really good because a lot of Targaryen players are turned on to Grey Worm with Bastards Girls for that exact reason. Giving them 5-7, 5 shots is really no joke, and then having charging volley, the vulnerable token. So I don't see a lot of the pikeman captain being used. I think he's pretty good. I still don't see a lot of Devon Seaworth. Really, really like Reckless Heroism. For a point, guaranteeing that 6-inch charge, I think the opportunity cost of D3 wounds is pretty low for a guaranteed 6. I can't count the number of times things have been screwed for me because I rolled a 1. It's not just losing the rerolls, but now that you lose tactics cards for the entire turn instead of just for the attack, there's a lot of situations where it just messes everything up. Again, as a Lannister player, if I'm banking on this Flayedman charge because I have Hear Me Roar in hand, and then I have Fealty to the Crown as well, and I've done this charge kind of recklessly just so that I can heal, my red cloaks or even my own flayed men, and I'm banking on this failed panic so I can restore them, and then I rolled a 1, and now I can't play either card. It can literally cost you the game, depending on how big that play was, that 1 can just screw everything up. So I really like it for not just the added range. Devon in a unit of Bastards Girl, if you can shoot them, you can charge them, and you can't fail. So it seems really good to me. It increases that threat range to basically 14 inches because you'll shift up, get into range, shoot them. If you're within 12 inches, unless you're going over a bog, you can charge because of movement 6. So that's a really, really, a couple of really good ones from Baratheons that I've stumbled upon while tinkering with Baratheons and list building.
For me, I think my number one pick, like probably in the whole game right now, and that's just because Lannisters have so many amazing attachments. My number one pick for an attachment that's really good, but is just overshadowed, is the Iron Resolve. Iron Resolve, plus one to panic test rolls and minus one to wound when failing panic tests. You know, certain units that you put him in are going to be, you know, nearly, let's even just say Pyromancers. I know Pyromancers, that's, you're going to look at 8-point investment. And again, it's more so about the fact that they're just overshadowed by all these other amazing attachments. But let's just take all of that out of the picture and just think about what the Guard Captain is giving. Iron Resolve is such an awesome ability. I mean, every time I see Iron Resolve on a commander, I'm just like, this is awesome. You know, whether it be Balon commander, I believe Stannis, R'hllor Stannis, and then Eddard, all three, I believe, have Iron Resolve as an ability, and it's awesome. I love Iron Resolve. Again, if you put it in the Pyromancers, you're looking at a 5-up morale with a minus one when failing. It means that even when you do fail, you have a 33% chance, as long as they don't have a way to boost the damage, to just not even, you can still fail and not take anything, which at that point, you're not losing any wounds, so you would just have to worry about whether or not they have, like, a trigger that happens when you fail a panic test. But still, Iron Resolve is such an overlooked ability, I think. And I think the problem really comes from that it's in Lannisters, and Lannisters are the faction that you need this ability against, in my opinion. To kind of offset a lot of their panic damage. But, I mean, not a lot of people go into list building with facing the mirror in mind. I mean, maybe at one point, you know, like when it was pretty much all Free Folk and Stark, you know, on like TTS and whatnot, a lot of players would do that. But when you have 8 factions and especially if you're playing casually, a lot of thing I think on people's, or the last thing on people's minds is the mirror match, unless maybe like their group just happens to be a bunch of the same faction. But I think Iron Resolve is such an amazing ability. It's just that, it's in Lannisters, which I think are arguably the overall best attachments in the game. I know we've talked about it before. I think maybe Starks are the best generic attachments, so like non-named characters. But I think if you're just factoring as a whole between the named characters and the generic, Lannisters by far have the best attachments, just like the Kingsguard and all their named ones. I mean, their stuff is so good that there's almost none that you would say are bad. Or like not very usable. You know, you can maybe make the argument for the Sentinel Enforcer, but that's only because he's more like a niche. Like he's more of a, like you're looking to do a very specific thing with a specific unit. And it's not really because the Enforcer's bad. He's just very, his play style and what he's trying to do is very narrow. But other than that, everything's amazing. Like all the different versions of Jamie are awesome. Like just trying to decide between 4 different Jamies, which one to run is always a headache. I mean, you could really count 5 because if you want to run the Kingsguard unit, you can't run Jamie. So yeah, it's the Guard Captain giving Iron Resolve for 1 point is an amazing investment. It's just, I think, overshadowed because of the other options Lannisters have to offer. You, I know you had to take off for a second. Are you back yet, Brett? Okay, so I would say another that I almost, in my opinion, I feel needs an attachment of some sort is the House Clegane Mountains Men. For those that listen to, you know, the Lannister episode where we talked about the units, this is one unit that I'll just kind of reiterate it, that is that there, if you're looking at it, it's actually a really good unit. My only problem with it was the fact that it's more of a support unit. Not, what I mean by support is I don't mean like it provides some outside ability, but the fact that it wants to attack weaker units, plus one to hit and vicious when attacking enemies with fewer remaining ranks. So you, what I mean by support is you want to have one unit get in the charge, maybe take out a rank, and then have these guys come in for the cleanup. But with that said, it makes them more of a support unit, and you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to want to run a bunch of them, meaning that if you want to run like an all Clegane list, you're looking at one of these, one of the Brigands cavalry unit that's coming out. You're looking at running the Mountain to give the keyword to someone, and then Sandor to give the keyword to someone. And, you know, that's four of the keyword, sorry, I shouldn't say keyword, the affiliation, which is a lot, and that's, I think, plenty. But it's just the fact that this, as of right now, is like the mainstay unit for the Clegane faction, and they're kind of built around being, you know, more so of a one of. But anyways, that's kind of why I feel like these guys really want some sort of attachment in there to really just boost their damage potential, so that way you don't mind, you know, running in there and doing a one versus one, even though you're not getting your effects off the bat, you know, you that plus one and that vicious right away. You know, a great example be to add to them, I think like the number one option really is Mandan Moore for that plus one to hit and sundering when you control the crown. And, you know, that way you can bring them back to a three up to hit, seven dice with critical blow and sundering. And now, you know, that should easily take out a rank. And now you're within, you know, that range to start getting that, the other buff. Cause then if you can get that other buff, now you're looking at hitting on twos with vicious thunder and critical blow. Another one to put in these guys is, you know, just an assault vet. I mean, the assault vet's so good. You can argue for him in just about any unit, but, in here, you know, that assault vet's going to give you that plus or that minus one to panic for dealing panic, you know, to kind of supplement a little of that that panic aspect because you're not getting your vicious right away. Guys are definitely a great unit, but they're one of those units that's going to benefit a lot more with an attachment in them. Another great attachment I thought that I had faced one of our locals, he had ran Ramsey Commander and put him in them so that they had the I always want to call it heroic visage, horrific visage. So he'll give him the horrific visage, helping trigger that prey on fear multiple times, you know, and that could be a great attachment to put in there. Of course, Roos giving that intimidating presence, just like the assault vet, but also that spread fear. Now, putting a commander in there could be risky. I mean, they are a 4-up, 7-up, which in my opinion is just a tad below, like, the average. You know, in my opinion, like a 4-up, 6-up is your average, like, midline for defensiveness. So you are kind of risking that a little bit. But that prey on fear healing, as long as you put a commander in there, that's going to help trigger that, I think will help supplement some of that defense for you. Otherwise, let's see. We haven't really talked about too much about Stark, so I know we have a lot of, you know, people who are still kind of on the Stark train, and I don't blame them. They have some pretty awesome stuff. They're not really my favorite faction anymore. They just kind of went in a direction that I wasn't too fond of, but I still play them. I mean, I have like 90% of the army painted, so I love trying to get my painted stuff out there. One unit I would say so many people run an attachment in that I really don't think needs an attachment in them, unless you're talking a commander, is House Tully Sworn Shields. Sworn Shields are absolutely amazing for 6 points. To be totally honest with you, I really don't even think they need the Stubborn Tenacity. I think if you took that out, they would be still a point unit. But yeah, that Stubborn Tenacity really just kind of drives them home as one of the absolutely best defensive units for their point costs. You know, obviously there's easily better defensive units, but they usually cost 7 points. For example, Unsullied Pikemen. But to have a 6-point unit that's super defensive just naturally, and you know, has a decent attack profile. They're hitting on 4s, 7, 5, 4, and then but that Stubborn Tenacity. They have a 6-up morale, so more often than not, without a modifier, you're going to be dealing some wounds back, especially if it's a Tully themed list and you can get some buffs in there, whether it be through Stalwart or I forget the plus one that the whatchamacallits give out, the Cavaliers embolden. If you have them nearby, given that embolden, you know, making them a 5-up. 5-up is kind of that, going from a 6 to a 5 is like one of the biggest jumps, in my opinion, for panic. You know, 6-up, you should pass a lot of them. A 5-up, probably not failing a lot. I mean, on average, without modifiers. So, Tully Sworn Shields, I mean, I understand why people want to put attachments in them. The biggest one I see in there is the Mormont Veteran, because you just make them so impossibly hard to kill. But at that point, you're not really adding any offensiveness to them. And now they're a 7-point unit. At least like the Pikemen, in my opinion, they have a lot more bite to them with the tactics deck and some of the options available to them. Not only that, but they have that set for charge to get like an extra attack in there. You know, so, but yeah, the Sworn Shields, I don't know, maybe if you're just running one, but a lot of the times your Sworn Shields are going to be that unit that's going to sit on an objective, kind of giving you some points. And the last thing I want to do is invest 7 or more points in a unit like that. Because that's that many more points not engaged with my opponent. I like to do whatever I can to, if I'm going to have, usually I try to have like one, I wouldn't call them a throwaway unit, but a unit that's 4, 5, 6 points usually at most, that I can have sit on an objective if it's like a 5-objective mission where they're just sitting there getting me a point every round. I don't have to worry about them, you know, getting attacked, because I kind of have all my forces, you know, occupying my opponent. And, you know, if my opponent's using, let's say, a 7-point unit to do the same thing, and I'm using my 4-point unit, I mean, I have the advantage there. I mean, I have 3 more points invested elsewhere, whether it be the tactics board, NCUs or other units, that it just helps win the battle in the end. I mean, that's obviously not always going to be the case, but it will give you that edge. Berserkers. Berserkers are, they're one of those units that I would say absolutely does not need an attachment. They're just so good. But for whatever reason, for me, I always want to throw an attachment there. They're that one unit that I would say is actually kind of in a category of its own where, like I was saying, it's a unit that, you don't really need an attachment in them because they're just so good. And, you can run them just by themselves, and they're going to put out a lot of damage for a 6-point unit. Then again, I feel like adding even just a 1-point attachment, it magnifies their potential. I mean, I would say that they're like a 6.5-point unit, or even more, as is at without an attachment, and then you put like a 1-point attachment in them, and now it like magnifies, depending on what attachment you put in them, it just magnifies their potential. And now a lot of times, in my opinion, a 6-point berserker unit with a 1-point attachment ends up being like an 8-point investment worth of a unit. For example, berserkers with a Mormont vet is a big one. A lot of people give that to them to make them a lot more survivable because they have that 5-up save, they have the unyielding, they have the 5-up morale, and now they have the hardened. Really just drives home the defensiveness combined with offensive potential by weight of dice and being able to hit better when they lose ranks. Another, for me, that's third on my list. Second on my list would be a Sworn Sword Captain. Just give, because you're hitting on 4s initially, and I still want to have that that Alpha Strike potential. That Sworn Sword Captain giving me the rerolls and making them vulnerable. I've talked about this before, but this is a long time ago now because Starks, I believe, was the first faction we covered with the 2021 update. And the Sworn Sword Captain in a unit of Berserkers is, in my opinion, it puts them back to 7 points, and that's what the old Berserkers were. I think Berserkers with the Sworn Sword Captain are by far better than the old 1.6 Berserkers at 7 points. Granted, you're using up your slot for the attachment, but, I mean, that's fine with me. I found that my Berserkers are way more potent now than ever before. But that Sworn Sword Captain, because more often than not, that vulnerable token is going to be more useful to me than Sundering. Not always. There are definitely situations where you're going to want that Sundering. But with Starks having some of that mobility built into their faction, you can usually get into the flank and still get that Sundering needed, essentially, because you're getting the -1 for the flank. And now you also have that vulnerable token. And then rerolling attack dice when you hit on 4s initially, if you haven't lost any ranks yet, is also huge. Because I've noticed that if you don't have rerolls of any kind and you're still sitting at 3 ranks hitting on 4s with 7 dice, isn't all that scary because you have no keywords or anything like that. But that Sworn Sword Captain really, in my opinion, drives home. And then, when you do finally get put down to your last rank, and now you're hitting on twos with nine dice. They're vulnerable. You get rerolls just in case you happen to roll any ones. Or even, let's say, you're fighting some skirmishers. And whether or not they have like a minus one or minus two, depending on what whatever combo potential you might face, you know, now you're hitting on fours, let's say if they have a minus two, so you're back to where you were, but you're still got that reroll, and now they're vulnerable. And we, you know, anyone that's kind of faced skirmishers knows how frustrating it is to get that minus, but also if you can get that lucky attack through where you actually roll well and get a bunch of attacks through, and now they're saving on their horrible defense and horrible morale, you know, you're really going to drive home a lot of damage. And then to wrap it off, like my number one favorite thing to put in Berserkers is Dario. He gives that those keywords back to, you know, he might not give that sundering that Berserkers used to have, but like I said, they, you know, they have so many dice. But now critical blow and precision, in my opinion, for if you have a lot of dice, especially if you have Catelyn influencing them, in my opinion, on the charge is better than the sundering, because the more dice you have, the more chances you have at those sixes. And if you can get a, you know, a ton of sixes, let's say like four of them with, because you have rerolls out of nine dice, I mean, you're looking at, you know, so much weight of dice on your opponent. Not only are they going to lose four guys from the precision, they are now going to have, you know, those still four saves from the sixes, because they essentially almost do what they did before. You'll still, they just don't provide all eight attacks from the critical blow to precision. Now four of them would be precision, take out four guys, and the other four would be your straight up saves, assuming you don't have a modifier there. So Dario for 1 point is amazing. He's amazing like everywhere, in my opinion. I absolutely love putting him in Greyjoy Reavers as well. What do you think? I think you're muted still. Maybe not. You said you were back. Oh, I see what happened. okay. Sorry, guys. So what happened was Brett's call was dropped, and then I didn't notice that. And when you rejoined, it auto-muted you.
Okay. You censored
so,
me. It's okay.
Yeah.
So were you asking me my thoughts on Dario or my thoughts on the Berserker conundrum?
Both. Kind of like just the whole – more so Berserkers, but, you know, Dario is kind of like my number one go-to. I like to run captains because they're not limited, you know, so I can run a bunch of them if I wanted to. But Dario, he's just amazing everywhere.
You know, I've been tinkering around a little bit with the Hedge Knights lately. And at the 7-point slot, they seem like they might be decent in a Stark list. The Tullys have a really nice for Embolden, but sometimes you just need that 7-point unit. So for me, if I was building a list for Starks around, you know, some Hedge Knights and some other units like that, I would run Peter Baelish, who's a fantastic NCU anyway, and then I would be running maybe Bowman with Braun, and I would be running this Berserkers with the Stormcrow Lieutenant and give them their sundering back. So essentially at the old price tag of 7 points, you'd basically rebuild your Berserkers to what they were before. If you're running Braun in Bowman, you wouldn't necessarily have to run Baelish because you would be incentivized to take the bag anyway. But I really like Peter's emergency once per round taking claim of the money bag on a really high tempo turn where you just absolutely have to have it and your opponent's going first. You can bolster up the defense on those hedge knights while simultaneously, you know, boosting your berserkers. So if I was building a Stark list that was kind of bag heavy, I would be really considering the Stormcrow Lieutenant for those berserkers. You could even go take it a step further and run Dario Commander in a Stark army, because I know a lot of people are running Rickon and Osha in Mercenaries again, so that's a Stormcrow unit. Dario gives the Stormcrow affiliation, and he's got those two tactics cards that let him control the bags. It might be interesting. I'm not saying it's like the greatest thing in the world, but I do like the Stormcrow Lieutenant offering Sundering. I do wish that he still gave you that plus one attack die, though. I just don't see the Stormcrow Lieutenant being used. I think needing to control the bags and the, you know, having Braun at a point, having Dario at a point is kind of taking away from the prominence of the Stormcrow Lieutenant. She was never really that super popular anyway. He was kind of a cool concept, but never really saw a lot of play. So, and then as far as Dario goes, yeah, I think he's good just about everywhere. Of course, I ran Dario and Sworn Brothers at Nationals, and that unit just wrecked everything it touched. I was running with Jon Snow Commander, so I had For the Watch, which is essentially a free charge as long as you can keep that unit unengaged. But between the free charge and if you do his follow-up attack later in the round at your convenience, and you use the vulnerable token in the reroll from the Sworn Swords ability, he's probably freed up because he probably killed whatever he was attacking. I mean, that's how it worked for me. I got the free charge, killed him later in the round, did my search force to get in position for another free charge, killed him the next round, you know, with the next attack because of the Sundering and all that stuff. And it you can put him in a really, really tough spot. But Dario in general, yeah, he's just really good. You know, whatever unit doesn't have critical blows, imagine giving them critical blows. I know he's got the downside of taking wounds for rolling one, but some of the upside that he can offer. I really still want to tinker around with a Tyrion list that has Pyromancers with Dario. That unit's capable of bringing any unit in the game down with one attack. You're taking double wounds on yep. one, but if you want to YOLO your way out, you know, burn out instead of fading away, just go all in. Some Dario Pyromancers, seven attack dice hitting on threes. You're getting no defensive save, critical blows. You're probably doing anywhere between 7 to 9 wounds with each attack. The cool thing is with him offering precision, you know, you think like, well, you know, precision is overkill on Pyromancers, but sometimes it can be kind of important to push through Hardened or Shield Wall or Resilience or some of these other abilities and really, really, really push that nasty attack through. Probably overkill most often the two hits with no defense saves is going to be enough, but, you know, it's basically one hit with no defense saves, one auto wound at that point. Pretty nasty.
Yeah, and not only that, you know, you might take two wounds for every one you roll, but, I mean, you could easily offset that by running High Sparrow NCU and Jacken NCU to double High Sparrow to kind of double your range. You obviously wouldn't be able to trigger both on the same fail, but you could just widen your field out across two different units within long range of that to make sure that you're always going to be in range of one of them. But, you know, because doing all that damage and then now they're taking that panic with a vicious, you know, you could just heal back those ones that you take. And then to go back to the Stormcrow Lieutenant real quick, and I know I've mentioned this quite a bit, I think, by now, but you never know when there's new people listening. Stormcrow Lieutenant, I think, is definitely undervalued, but
more like him in Baratheons is just amazing, because you Baratheons among any other faction has the potential to run Alistar and Littlefinger and guarantee yourself the bags every single round, with the exception of, you know, if you like use Intrigue and Subterfuge or like Olenna or something that can turn one of them off to prevent it. But like outside of a few corner cases, you know, you're guaranteed the bags like 98% of the time. And what I mean by that is if your opponent goes first, takes the bags, then you'll not have the bags for like one turn, you know, before you then could go with Alistar and swap the spots. So you basically have the bags the entire game. And with that said, that means you can run Bronn in some Sentinels to make them a 3-up, 5-up, which is awesome. But then you can run a bunch of Lieutenants in anything that you really want to get that Sundering and that highest attack die, especially if you're going to bracket pretty badly, you know, all things considered for like a higher point unit, let's say like Rose Knights. Rose Knights, you know, they are a 7-5-4. The problem with being at 7, a lot of times if you're at 7, you're normally like full health and you can't trigger off your Deadly Bloom and whatnot. But now, if your opponent doesn't attack you, you're going with hitting on threes with 7 dice and Sundering, and if they do attack you, you're still at 7 dice hitting on threes with Sundering. Potential with Rose Knights, I mean, I know it's an 8-point investment, but now you've turned this super defensive, scary unit, like defensively, into this unit that has this, like, this bite, you know, this proactive bite, you know, not a reactive one from the Deadly Bloom, but now you can go off and really start wreaking havoc for that 1-point investment, especially if you're a fan of the Rose Knights. And you can pretty much say that about most things in the Baratheon faction, even Wardens. Wardens automatically always having 6 dice with Sundering, but also now have that Counter-Strike Rule or Faithful. They don't bracket too bad, but still at 1 rank hit with 4 dice, but now you go back to 7 dice hitting on 4s, you'll have that Sundering. You can use their Faith token in order to get Precision and Vicious, so now you have Precision, Vicious, Sundering. What else? Last one I'll throw out there is Queensmen. Because I know the Kingsmen already have Sundering, but Queensmen, they bracket pretty bad too at 7-5-4. I mean, I guess that's semi-average for a lot of units, but again, this is a defensive unit at 7 points. It doesn't hit very hard, and that 1-point investment I know puts you into that 8-point bracket, but if you really are set on wanting to run these guys, you know, whether it be Rose Knights or Rewards Queensmen, it kind of gives you a little extra needed to make them, you know, really hold up their end of things and really start to pull their weight rather than just an expensive objective holder. Yeah, so I think we can kind of wrap it up there. There's so much more we could talk about. I mean, we jumped around a lot between every faction, I think, other than Targaryens. I think the only one we didn't really talk about, we didn't talk too much about Night's Watch. But, I mean, with all fairness, those are arguably the two top factions. Some could say Lannisters is number two. You know, I think right now the other factions kind of need some love. So can maybe do like a part two to this and really dive into the Targaryens and Night's Watch and then kind of go over a lot of the other stuff that we didn't talk about. But when you're talking about a topic like this that involves the attachments and the units, because they kind of go hand in hand when talking about whether or not you should or shouldn't run an attachment in something, I mean, there's so much you could talk about. There's so many combos, so many, you know, do's and don'ts. And when I say do's and don'ts, obviously, you know, do what's fun for you. There really is no wrong answer. It's just, you know, just kind of a discussion, you know, something to kind of consider. And again, to kind of end it off, if there's been an attachment that you looked at and you have never played it before, but, and that's simply because of how bad it looks on paper, do a game with them. Promise that you're going to be surprised. You're not going to be you're probably not going to be blown away. I mean, you might, but you probably won't be blown away by it. But I think you would be pleasantly surprised if you find like a unit that attachment synergizes with really well. You'll be pleasantly surprised at the outcome of how it performs. Now, granted, that's, you know, that doesn't count if you put it in something and then you YOLO it into death and it never does anything all game. But, you know, but yeah, just try new things out and experiment. You know, there's still so much for us to all kind of try out, you know, with the new 2021 stuff. I mean, I don't even remember at this point when it came out, but, you know, we'll just say it's been out, what, 5 months or so since like it dropped, like officially or officially unofficial, I don't know what you would call it at this point, but enough to where people could actually play it on the tabletop for themselves. So, you know, just keep experimenting, keep trying to find all those new you know, potentials. I mean, right now the meta keeps shifting. You know, you think this thing is the best thing, and then the next thing comes out, and you've seen a bunch of lists out there that are, you know, you look at them, you wouldn't think that they're bad by no means, but, you know, you'd go, oh, I'm surprised that one, you know, did so well. Or, you know, I would never would have thought of that. I don't know if it necessarily fits into that category, but Cyrus, he had a really awesome, well-thought-out Lannister list that he brought to, was it Nationals, Brett?
Yeah, it was Nationals.
Yeah, and, I mean, you look at that list, and you know, it's not like some crazy out-there thing, but it's not, I would say, your typical cookie cutter or usual meta Lannister list, and you know, it worked amazingly well, and that's just one of those things that, you know, just keep trying different things, especially if you play a lot of casual games. And when, what do you have to lose? It's a casual game. That's the time to really just try anything and everything and see what fits the best. I mean, that's how I kind of stumbled upon my one Stark list in 1.6 that performed super well. You know, the all Berserker and Great Axe Blackfish list with some wolves. You know, I just was playtesting, trying things out, and you know, I was running pretty much Eddard Commander and Great John Umber Commander. Then I finally stumbled upon Blackfish. And then I stumbled upon, you know, some of the combos that could happen with Blackfish and the Berserkers and the attachments and so on. And, you know, I developed this list that just clicked with me and wasn't necessarily like meta or something that other people thought was good at face value. But I think that's the other important thing, is finding something that clicks with you, that you enjoy playing. Because the more you enjoy playing something, the more you're going to, in my opinion, play as a better person. If you don't really like what you're playing, I've seen this a lot, you know, someone will see the new hot list, and just because they own that army or faction, they'll run that, and they won't perform very well. Their heart's just not in it. I mean, they might do...
they might do decent depending on the scale of the strength of the faction or what they're doing. And this kind of goes across all games in general. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, even just like watching 40K big events, a lot of like the top lists are these like random, what in the world were they thinking? You know, you look at it and you're like, how in the world did that do good? Like, it just seems like some hodgepodge of randomness put together, but it's something that someone crafted with an idea based on something between the love of being able to create this thing and having tested out enough. And, you know, you just perform better when you're playing something that just kind of clicks with you. So, you know, I'll say it for like the 100th time, I think, by now, but just try out new things, and I think you'll be surprised. Brett, we'll jump over to you. Do you have any kind of final thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I have a homework assignment. It's a homework assignment / I want to hear about it if it works for you. I want someone to do the biggest heel bomb possible, and I'll tinker around with it, and I'll try to make it work for myself, too. It could work in my roost list. I want Jock and Hagar to High Sparrow and a Fealty to the Crown. So you – actually, it's even better if you have the Hound. You can heal even more. But essentially, I want you to panic them, make them fail, trigger the High Sparrow, heal, spread fear, make another unit fail, trigger Jockin's High Sparrow, heal again, then play a Fealty to the Crown on top of it. You get bonus points if you're running Sandor, and you get Fueled by Slaughter as well. So I think with Fueled by Slaughter, you can heal 13, but with just Fealty to the Crown, High Sparrow, Jockin, you can heal 10 in one attack. So I want someone to do it. It's a meme. Make it happen. Spread fear and do a massive bomb heal. And I guess if you Tycho at the start of the round, you could heal 15 or 18. But I want to hear it. If you've done it, if someone's done it already or someone's done something similar, you know, feel free to post in the Facebook page or in our Discord or wherever you want and tell us about the biggest heal you've ever had in one turn, and or try out this Jock and Hagar High Sparrow with Spread Fear meme big bomb heal.
I'll start us off with this one. I did it with Greyjoys. I have mentioned my super heal Greyjoy list before, but it's basically it's like four Reavers, one with Balon, three with Warsworns. The fifth unit is a Trapper unit with Asha. And then I have Aaron Greyjoy for that influence healing. I have Wendemir for his token healing. And then I have Tycho for his healing. I was down to technically zero wounds, but went to one wound because of what is dead may never die. I then Tycho'd. I then used Wendemir's order, so that's 5, 6, 7, 8 wounds I'm at now. And then I activated the unit and used, what's that one card? Raiding Call, and transferred 4 Trappers over. So it was a pretty insane amount of healing, and none of it conflicts with themselves because the order from Wendemir and the once per game from Tycho are not actually orders or effects that conflict. They have the same timing, but I can use both. And then the tactic card is when the unit activates. So it's definitely some crazy combo potential out there. But I'll close this out by doing some shout outs. I want to mention to everyone, I think they have about 10 to 12 people right now signed up. So not as big as the previous one, but Gamers Haven in Ohio is doing another tournament on November 6th. I will most likely be there. I might get sent out on another deployment this coming Friday, but it's looking like it's not going to happen. And even if I do get sent out, I think it's only going to be for like a week. And the by this Friday, it'll be like 2 weeks before the Gamer Havens tournament. Anyways, with that said, I'm mentioning that because I plan to bring a ton of prize support, because I don't think they have CMON prize support this time around. But I know Gamers Haven will be doing some prize support, and then, like I said, Small Console Radio will be providing a bunch. So if you can make it to that one, that would be awesome. I would love to see you guys there. Is November 6th, which is the first Saturday of the month. It would be awesome to see some of you guys. I've only ever heard awesome things about Gamers Haven. I have unfortunately not been able to go yet. The last couple of tournaments were really bad timing for me, but I am super excited to get out there and, you know, meet a bunch of the guys. I believe Chris from Sunday Slaughter will also be there. They might be streaming some matches, maybe not streaming, but recording some matches. So definitely mark that on your calendar and try to go to that one if possible. If you're not a part of their Discord, you can get like all the info and ask any questions that you need to on the Sunday Slaughter Discord. And you can find the tournament info on A Song of Ice and Fire stats.com. I believe you do have to make a profile if you don't have one, but it's really easy to make a profile. And if you haven't made one already, I definitely suggest doing that. But they have the tournament info on there. I believe they did announce that they are doing alternate list building. That's, if you haven't seen it already, that's the document that CMON had posted. So they're doing the medium-sized game, which ends up being 42 points. It's 26 points in combat units, 4 points in attachments, 4 points in NCU, and 8 flex points. The flex points can be used as anything between those other three. So you could run 8 points in attachments, 12 points, sorry, no. You could run 12 points in attachments if you wanted, 12 points in NCUs. You could just run, you know, the flex points. If you've done fantasy football, it, you know, can be used for any of those categories. But I like the potential of this format. You know, it, because it's 42 points, really the only thing it's requiring you to do outside the normal is run 2 points in attachments, because you have to think you're getting those 2 extra points in there. So even though you have to run 4 points in attachments because you have 2 extra points, you're really, if you have a 40-point list, it's only really forcing you to run 2 points in attachments outside your normal. And then on top of that, you can run 3 NCUs, obviously, if you run 3 4-pointers, but it does limit you from, if you want to run a 5 or 6-point NCU, you won't be able to run 3 NCUs, but I think that's fine. I think this event's definitely more on the fun side of things. I believe there are no restrictions, but it's kind of like one of those things where a lot of people kind of have this understanding that it seems like no one's going to be running like the crazy stuff that a lot of people have a problem with. But they didn't want to restrict anything this time around, which I respect. I think it's all good. I like a little bit of everything. For me personally, I just like knowing what we're doing ahead of time. I just don't like surprises. So otherwise, like, I don't mind alternate list building, if need be, or not, restrictions or not, just as long as it's clear from the get-go. And it looks like it's going to be a ton of fun. Last shout-out I want to do is for another tournament, which is Dragonfall. This one is in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. It's a Dragonfall the Dragonfall Convention. I believe it's like $30 for the weekend pass, and then it's like another $20 for the event ticket, which is over 2 different days. That one is this coming weekend, the 23rd and 24th, at least for the the Ice and Fire tournament is this coming Saturday, Sunday. I believe the convention itself is on Friday as well, but there's no, I don't believe there's any Ice and Fire on that day. So definitely check that out. I will, again, as long as I don't get sent out this Friday, I will be at that one as well. But yeah, we can wrap it up there. I want to thank you, Brett, for coming on. You know, this is definitely an awesome topic, and I was glad to finally get to discuss it. You know, I can't wait. You know, we'll definitely have to do like a part two. Probably not anytime like super soon, but I'll probably put it on the queue to talk about. And, you know, probably me and you, Brett, will do it just that way. We don't accidentally, if I have other people on, we might accidentally start talking about the same stuff we talked about on this one. But, yeah, again, thank you, Brett, for coming on. This and everyone listening, thank you all for listening. And definitely join our Discord if you are not a part of it. On there, you can kind of give us some show suggestions that have been on your mind. And we will put them in the queue, and I'd love to be able to discuss some of the stuff that you guys kind of have on your mind. I know someone had just suggested they wanted to hear about a wish list. I was saying we might save that for some time in December. One, because it's kind of thematic with the holidays. Two, because we kind of did a lot of wish listing and like suggestional stuff in all of the 2021 update episodes. Not only that, our viewers kind of seem to be torn between, you know, not wanting that content and wanting it. So we figure we'll provide it that we kind of please a little bit of everyone. Yeah. So again, join our Discord, give us some suggestions. We can never have too many topics. You know, we'd rather have way too many that we don't know if we'll ever be able to get to all of them than, you know, go week to week going, you know, what are we going to talk about this time? And just kind of make stuff up as we go. So, again, thank you all for listening in. This is the Small Council Radio, and it is dismissed.